In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Last week, we talked about election integrity, and I opened that show talking about trust and how we can't trust our elections because the state has done nothing to build the bridges of trust. And that as long as they continue to say, trust us, there was no election fraud, but sue people for daring to ask questions, we can never have trust in our elections. Nor should we. Little did I know that the issue of trust would again be central to today's show, because Israel made the mistake of trusting its neighbors and believing them when they said they wanted peace. But the whole time they were fawning peace, they were actually preparing for a devastating attack that not only shattered the existing peace, but likely shattering for years to come any possibility for real peace and certainly shattering any chance of trust. Longtime listeners of iSpy Radio may remember Kamal Saleem. Kamal grew up in an Islamic household that was committed to Islamic jihad. At a young age, age 7, he was sent to a jihadi training camp where he was taught warfare, but also cultural jihad. Age 7. That's a second grader. Can you imagine for a moment sending your second grader to a camp to learn to kill people and to learn to wage war, physical and psychological, on your enemies? This wasn't games like cowboys and Indians. This was real training, hands-on training, with firearms, explosives, and the art of knife skills, including beheading your opponent. A second grader. What does it say about a culture that does that? And it wasn't Kamal's father pushing this. It was his mother who insisted that he go. When I asked Kamal, who had come to America to destroy it from within but had instead converted to Christianity and has been trying to wake up America and the church to the very real dangers of radical Islam, when I asked him how any mother could do that, he said this very important point. Muslim parents encourage their children to become martyrs for Allah, because when a martyr dies in Islamic beliefs, the whole extended family is given entry to heaven. It's their free pass into paradise for the whole family. It's why they don't care if they die. They embrace death because to do so is the only guaranteed way into heaven, bypassing whatever sins you and your family might have had. The slate is wiped clean with the martyr's blood. You might also remember that, according to Kamal, Muslims have a special dispensation to lie to their enemies, taqiyya. Lying in Judeo-Christian beliefs is a sin, and it is looked down on in Islamic beliefs, but it's okay to lie to one's enemies, to deceive them, trick them, and especially so if Muslims are in a position of weakness compared to their enemies, or if it is to hide one's true intentions from one's enemies, like the intention to kill them, or to gain an advantage politically that can be exploited later. And as much as Israel is now in a physical war, it is also very much a spiritual war, as utter and dark, dark evil has been exposed now that Hamas has shown their true intentions and their true brutality. Sukkot is a week-long Jewish holiday better known in the West as the Feast of Tabernacles. This year it started on September 29th and went through Friday, October 6th, followed by a Sabbath on the 7th. During the festival week, in what many Muslims saw as provocative and offensive, hundreds of Jews stormed the Temple Mount complex through the Western Wall Gate near Al-Aqsa Mosque and attempted to perform what was described as Talmudic rituals, according to a Temple Mount official. In response, a Hamas spokesperson said the Zionist enemy's aggression against Al-Aqsa Mosque will not pass normally. Palestinian anger will have a say. 3 days later, in an attack some have said was in planning for more than a year, in the early hours of Saturday, the Jewish Sabbath, Hamas stormed through the barrier walls around Gaza. According to one Israeli insider, advance teams slipped over the walls, electronically jammed communications, and killed the Israeli soldiers at the 50 outposts along Gaza. Hamas launched 5,000 rockets into Israel in a multi-pronged attack from multiple locations. They attacked by land with armed SUVs and pickups, by air through paragliders armed with bombs, and even by sea. Estimates are some 1,000 to 2,000 Israelis were killed, hundreds of them captured and taken back to Gaza, including women, children, babies, and the elderly. Israel responded, officially declaring war for the first time in decades. In the time since, they have leveled entire city blocks in Gaza, including at least one mosque, and they regained control of the border and have surrounded and sealed off the entire Gaza Strip. But this is not over and still ongoing, with Hezbollah and other Islamic jihadist groups already firing missiles and rockets from Lebanon and Syria. To talk about all of this and what has happened, why it happened, and speculate on what will happen, I'd like to welcome back Scott McEwen. He is the New York Times best-selling co-author of American Sniper and has his own series of books and a host of military contacts and experts on whom he relies to write those so accurately. Scott, it is good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wish it was under much better circumstances. I'd much rather be talking about your books and the movies and whatnot, but let's start with the why it happened. And of course, I think the why it happened has so many potential answers to it. There's many whys, not just one, but something I suspect we both agree on is how it happened. Hamas could not fight if they were not getting millions in cash and weapons from Iran and other Islamic organizations. And the Biden administration has signaled support for Iran, including that it wants to lift sanctions and wants to appease the hardliners in their nuclear programs. And then there's, of course, the cash. And that right there is not just a how, but one of the whys. This attack simply does not happen without Iran's support, and Iran does not do it if they feared America. So I lay this attack firmly at the Biden administration's feet. Your thoughts on that?
I don't think there's any doubt of that. And there's arguments out there that possibly the most recent billions of dollars have not yet been delivered. But there was things that took place before that, which were every bit as devastating or as important economically. Particularly the fact that, you know, during the Trump administration, they, because of the affirmative and known terrorist activities by the Iranians and the support that they'd given to Hamas and Hezbollah and other groups out there, they were limited to 400,000 barrels of oil to be sold out of that country. And that increased in the Biden administration to 2 million barrels a day. So basically, they five times the amount of oil that was coming out. And then you got to figure with the revenue from oil now going up so dramatically that probably 10 times the amount of revenue that they ever had coming in, which unfortunately is revenue that can be used for terrorist activities, such as giving Hamas over 2,000 missiles that were already shot, you know, and everything to do with that. So to just focus on the $6 billion, which was stupid in and of itself, in my opinion, to give that money to them is really inappropriate, because there was so much more that took place before that,
yes.
Mark.
Oh, absolutely.
That also helped and appeased this regime.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that beside the money itself, the amount of money, the $6 billion, that was released on 9/11. I mean, don't tell me that didn't send a signal to our enemies. And now we've learned that on that same day, Iran was meeting with Hamas. And before that, as you said, we had things like with Afghanistan. We had $80 billion left behind in equipment and ammunition. How much of that do you think ended up in Hamas's hands? You've got $130 billion sent to Ukraine, and some of those weapons months ago was being reported ending up on the black market.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got this flow of weapons and technology, and essentially, you know, the other thing that happened too is, you know, I've got to ask myself, and all of us have to ask ourselves, where is the intel? Because, look, let me tell you something. Our CIA... You talk about the money that's out there for these informants and things of that nature. Well, the amount of money that they spend just on these guys inside the country to quote informant on these other people, you got to imagine in the Middle East, the amount of money is millions and millions and millions of dollars that they use to get this information out of these people. So where was the CIA?
Yes.
Where was the FBI? I mean, in the intelligence gathering.
Yeah, I think that is a big question. And I think that really is also one of the whys did this happen. Let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with Scott McEwen talking about the Israeli war. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, and we're talking about Israel's war with Hamas and doing that with military writer and expert Scott McEwen. He is the co-author of the best-selling book, American Sniper, but he also has his own series of novels out there, the Sniper Elite series, and he has several military-focused nonfiction books as well. We'll link those up on iSpyRadio.com. Today's show is 1341. And Scott, going out of that break there, you were talking about intel failures, and I'd like to continue that because I think that's been one of the biggest questions here is why did Israel and all the Western intel agencies not pick up on this coming attack? Egypt is now saying that they tried to warn Israel that something was coming, but Israel ignored them. Do you think this was an intel failure, or did they know and just not think much of it?
with Netanyahu at the reins over there, you know, who I truly believe has Israel's best interest in mind. And for many reasons, I believe he has the United States as well. I mean, it's one of the few guys that I actually trust as a world leader. I just don't think if he'd heard from the right sources that this was coming, that he would have left things so open. And I say that because, you know, your closest, your trigger points, your DMZ points, which is where the people, 250 were executed at that concert or something like that. I mean, Mark, I saw the op of these guys coming in on these hang gliders or whatever, these motorized hang gliders and stuff, you know. And, you know, and I'm not bragging. I'm not throwing my chest out or anything else. But I'm telling you right now, if I was there with an M4 and a 30-round clip and about five bandoliers, I'm telling you right now, let alone a group of SEALs or a group of IDF, you know, tunnel rats, they'd have killed them. And I mean, they'd have shot them like dogs coming out of the sky, because it was immediate and it was open and obvious when they started dropping grenades off these things, what was going on. And there was nobody there. I mean, I was absolutely shocked and horrified at the lack of defense capability that they had on such a close point to that DMZ. And, you know, I think it's a lesson for us in the United States, because I'm telling you right now, if you don't think we don't have similar, let's just say, attitudes inside this country in this last group of 4 million immigrants that came unchecked, and you see these protests and these things going on right now in these cities, let me tell you something, and I don't like to say it, and I don't want to alarm people, but watch your six, because I'm telling you right now, we're going
to
get hit.
Absolutely. If you don't have firearms, now is definitely a good time to get some. I'd like to come back to that about these immigrants and whatnot, but I do think the timing of this was kind of, I guess it should have set off more alarm bells. Hamas, in the immediate aftermath of this, they were boasting that they did this because of the 50th anniversary of the start of the Yom Kippur War, which was October 6th, 25 years ago in 1973. So I would have thought that maybe Israel, if they were in fact getting any kind of intel from Egypt and whatnot, they maybe should have paid a little more attention to it. But, you know, it was also the Jewish Sabbath. I can understand why people just weren't simply expecting this. But regarding the surprise attack being a real surprise to Israel, apparently Hamas has duped Israel into a false sense of security. For more than a year now, they've been pretending that they wanted peace and had no more stomach for a fight. And yet the whole time it turns out they were planning this attack. I mean, it clearly takes some time to smuggle in both weapons and cash. This doesn't happen in just a couple of weeks' time, does it?
No, especially this level of missiles and stuff like that. I mean, they overwhelmed the Iron Dome, which is an unbelievably sophisticated, has the ability to shoot down missiles and things of that nature. I mean, so there was just there was a huge amount of influx of weapons, materials, and intel, I'm sure, you know, that came in getting ready for this. So, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, surprise attacks are by their very nature surprise. But that being said, if people think the world has become more civilized and everybody's kumbaya just because these Democrats want to make you think that, let me tell you something, you know, and you come in and you start cutting off babies' heads and things like that, it brings you right back to the stark reality that when you go to that area of the world to fight, as Chris Kyle once said, no matter what your mama told you, violence does solve problems, and you need to use violence.
Yes. Yeah, especially against people that believe that you have no right to exist, and that is their main mission.
Right.
That they want to kill Jews. I mean, that Hamas has made that pretty clear. You mentioned the Iron Dome failure. This was something else, too, that people were speculating on in the first hours of the attack, and even for a day or two after. They're just wondering what exactly happened there, because it's had in the past a success rate of taking out 90% of the rockets fired in Israel. Some have said that it failed because so many rockets got through. Some were saying that it was simply overwhelmed. I've also heard since that there were some sophisticated electronic jamming of it. Have you heard anything about that?
I don't have any good intel, but I'm certain, given the amount that got through and the sophistication of that thing, that I think there was some electronic jamming that took place. And look, these guys are getting better. I mean, these guys have got technology, and let's face it, the Iranians are playing with the Russians, and the Russians are playing with the Chinese, and the Chinese have got a lot of capabilities that I'm sure they're giving over to these bad guys to test and see if they work, you know, and obviously some of them do.
Yeah. In terms of one of the speculations out there is that they just overwhelmed the defense system, the Iron Dome. I don't think that's probably the case. And so I am kind of inclined to agree with you that it probably was some kind of electronic jamming, because in previous attacks, one not too long ago, they had 4,000 rockets fired at them. But, you know, maybe 5,000 in rockets in a shorter period of time, you know, that maybe did overwhelm the system somewhat. But even with a 9% success rate, if you're letting in 10% of them, that's 500 rockets that are hitting somewhere. But if they have discovered this secret, that it's a matter of sheer volume in a short time, what does that mean for the future for Israel's defense systems now?
Well, I think it means you always got to be upgrading, because let's face it, the world has become much more sophisticated. That's one thing that we've learned from the Ukrainian conflict, is the prior technologies that existed, now with all the drone technology and all the electronic technology that can be brought to bear as a result of that, you know, I mean, the world has become a much more dangerous place. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. You got to stay ahead of it. And I'm not sure, maybe the Iranians had some good stuff that they shipped over there, you know, who knows, but I'm sure it's all a testing ground.
Yeah, it certainly makes you wonder if they're moving several more thousands of rockets into place right now, like in Lebanon and Syria. Okay, let's go and take a break there, come back. We're going to continue our discussion about the Israel war, doing that with Scott McKeown. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about Israel's war with Hamas following the surprise attack on Saturday. We're doing that with Scott McKeown, best known for the New York Times bestselling book, American Sniper. Scott has a number of military contacts that he relies on to write his books, including members of America's Special Forces. And before we get to Special Forces, I'd like to talk to you about that, because it's been announced that some of them may be heading there, or at least they're gearing up. One of the conspiracy theories that is out there is that the Israelis did know that this was coming, but wanted an excuse to finally go in and wipe out Gaza, and probably use it, I think, as an excuse to take full control of the West Bank, too. I mean, if that's their goal, if that's their intention, is to take out Gaza, you know, with all of the psychological warfare that we've seen the last few years, I can see why some people might think that. But what are your thoughts on that they knew and let this happen?
Well, you know, it's so debased to even go there that, mm-hmm. I just don't believe it. I mean, I'm not willing to believe that. And I'm not willing to, you know, to blindly believe anything hardly from big government anymore. But that being said, I just can't believe somebody like Netanyahu would allow his people to be executed in that fashion. And it literally executed in that fashion for purposes of creating a scenario to go to war. I just, I don't think it's true. I think he's lost too much personally. They've lost too much as a country. And I just don't think that's their that's the way they're going to do it. Yeah. And so I'm not willing to go there. I do think that there were failures. There's no doubt about it. I do think that, you know, that things happened that could have been done better. However, that said, do they want an excuse to go into Gaza? I strongly doubt it. Yeah. I mean, but it's not going to end up pretty, and they know it. They know how many people they're going to lose going through that area, because it's, you know, you talk about booby trap, man. It's going to make going to make Sadr City or Fallujah look like a walk in the park.
Yes.
This place is by definition the belly of the beast.
Yeah, I don't, you know, the Jewish culture is not one of death. They embrace life. Mm-hmm. They celebrate life. It's not like the Islamic culture, which is a culture of death. That's how you get into heaven in a lot of cases, is through either killing other people or by killing yourself. And that not just gets you into heaven, but it brings your whole family along as well. So I'm just not buying that they knew it and let it happen. But I do think that now this has happened, I think the gloves are definitely off. I think Gaza, I'm not sure what they're going to do with that, whether they're going to completely level it. Let's come back to that, though, because go ahead.
I'll tell you what they're doing right now. And people are wondering what's going on with the delay and everything else. But I'll tell you right now, and I'm not divulging anything about United States troops when I say this, because if I had information, I certainly would not say the information that I had at this stage. But I will tell you this. My personal security guy for my property is a ex-IDF tunnel rat. Mm. And he is still in the reserves. He has American citizenship as well. And he just flew back. I saw him 2 days ago, was leaving for Los Angeles for a direct flight to Tel Aviv to join up. So I know that those guys will be infiltrating and will be getting back as many hostages as they can right now before a full-scale incursion is going on. So I'm telling you right now that inside that area, there are special forces guys, probably from multiple different nations, that are operating there right now. And I'll guarantee you they're getting as many people as they can back before the big hit comes, because they know that they'll start executing them.
I think that that's a given. In fact, they've already promised that. They've said if Israel doesn't stop the bombings, they're going to just start executing people on live TV.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that, Israel has also said, we realize that and we just don't care anymore. It's a shame to lose those people, but we have got to stop this.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it, because the whole thing of hostages and, you know, and paying ransom money, I mean, it doesn't take an intelligent person to figure out. If you pay $6 billion to Iran for essentially hostages, should you be surprised when the same group of people or a very closely affiliated group of people ask for millions of dollars for the hostages they've just recently taken? It's a non-ending cycle.
Yes.
And these guys had better realize it, that you don't do deals with these people like that, because it will end up just coming back and killing you.
Well, and it hasn't worked, as you rightfully point out. In fact, there was an interview with Thomas Sowell from 6 years ago, who said that this appeasement of these terrorists by giving back land, you know, Israel was promised peace. They gave back the land. They did not get the peace. And so it's time to retake the land. And I think that's what we're going to see with Gaza, is my suspicion, is that, you know, now that this has happened, they're going to use this as the reason and motivation to just get rid of Gaza. What that means exactly, I think, remains to be seen. It could be that they want to retake full control, maybe deport those people somewhere. I know that Qatar has said that they will take refugees. There's 2.2 million people, so this is not going to be an easy or decent situation going forward. It's going to be awful going forward. But I just don't know how you can continue with this when everything you've done to try to get peace has not worked, when they have been promising you peace the last year and saying they didn't want to fight anymore, and the whole time they're planning this. You just can't go back from that.
Nope. I agree with you.
Well, we had mentioned the special forces there, and it's been announced that the Navy's SEAL Team 6 and the Army's Delta Force are being put on alert, ready to go, apparently, to try to rescue hostages, as it looks like that's what they'd be called in for. Is it wise from a military standpoint to announce such things? I mean, or do you think that they might be going in for other reasons as on-the-ground advisors and strategists?
Well, let me tell you something. I mean, these guys all know the game. It's almost like trying to explain to, you know, a pit bull that wants the dog fight starts that, you know what, he's going to jump in and grab you by the neck. Well, let me tell you something. These guys know who they're dealing with. They know the rules. The rules are that there are no rules. Once you take the pit bull off the leash, i.e., and you got to come back with our pit bulls off our leashes, and I don't mean that pejoratively towards our special forces. I just mean these guys are not negotiators, okay? They're not there to come in and say, hi, here's a couple bucks. Would you please give me? No, this is not the way it works, and everybody knows it's not the way it works. So once this starts like this, everybody knows the rules of the game that actually play the game, and the game is now get as many back as you can before they kill them.
Yeah. I do know that Hamas, you know, of course, they had the attack there on Saturday. They killed anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 Jews. They kidnapped at least 100 women, children, babies, and elderly. There's still hundreds missing. Israel then immediately pummeled Gaza, and that has been continuing. And as you said, they've sealed off that entirely. You can't get in or out now without Israel's permission. I think they've allowed several hundred thousand refugees to get out already. But then Tuesday morning, Hamas declared that all of their goals had been achieved, and now they want a truce. So, I'm sure, because now you were so trustworthy last time. As I said, I think Israel is just done with Hamas and likely forever. But the question is, why aren't the Arabs and Palestinian people equally done with Hamas? They haven't gotten peace either.
I got another question for you. I'll answer a question with a question. Why do we allow BLM to do support statements of Hamas inside our country when these are the same group of people that I consider to be the ones that burnt and did domestic terrorism in our own country? Why do we allow it? Because it seems as if people just don't ever learn their lesson.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mark, but I'm despondent at times when I look at what we allow, even within our own country. And when you go to the Middle East and realize the decades and the ingrained generational issues that they have there, it's even deeper.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, let's take a break there. Come back. We'll continue with Scott McEwen talking about the Israeli war, and coming up, we'll be talking about what is next. And welcome Welcome back. We're talking about the war with Israel, between Israel and Hamas, and we're doing that with Scott McEwen. He's a best-selling author of American Sniper. He is a military researcher and an avid consumer of strategy as well. And so, Scott, in that last segment, I had asked, why do people keep tolerating Hamas? And, you know, just so people know, Hamas is not some fringe group that just happens to reside in Gaza. The residents of Gaza elect them and have elected them as their leaders ever since 2005, when Israel gave back Gaza to the Palestinians. Their platform and ongoing pledge has been to wipe Israel and Zionism off the face of the earth. And it seems to me the people there in Gaza, knowing this is who Hamas is and their commitment to kill Jews and not hiding it, you know, it's not some vague election promise. They promised to do it, and they have done it. There have been six armed conflicts since 2005. It seems to me the people of Gaza that keep electing these people have to bear some sort of responsibility here. I mean, you can't act surprised when Hamas does what they got elected to do.
Ultimately, you're correct. Ultimately, I don't see how you can argue any other points, given what it is. I mean, obviously, they are the most militant and the strongest, not unlike the Taliban in Afghanistan. That being said, is there any de facto populace that would otherwise be able to defy them, throw them out of office, whatever else? I should think there would be. You know, I should think there is. But maybe I'm naive in that regard on the ground. I don't know. But I do know this. They are the de facto political arm of the people of that area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As we said previously, I don't get the sense that Israel is willing to just hit back this time. Hamas has already said they're going to execute those prisoners. One minister in Israel has vowed to pummel Gaza, even if they execute those victims. But one interesting video that I saw with a Middle East correspondent has said that every Jew that he has talked to there in Israel this time has said they will sit in a bunker for a year if they have to. They don't care anymore. They want Gaza leveled. And no more prisoner exchanges. They want Gaza leveled. And that's why I think the severity of this attack has really changed the dynamic here. I don't see any possibility of a two-state solution going forward anymore. I think this attack totally takes that off the table.
Well, you may be correct. I think that you're absolutely correct that the Israelis have had enough. I mean, you know, and there's a group of Israelis that are pretty, many people don't realize, pretty dovish, you know, as far as during elections and things of that nature. I mean, there's a reason why Netanyahu has been thrown out of power a few times, but he's always brought back.
Yeah.
You know, it's because it seems as if they're, you know, the people want to turn the other cheek and, you know, and more power to them. And I guess their willingness to do so. But I think this time they've stepped over the line. I think when you kill that many women and children and do that many bad things, and people realize that you're dealing with, you have to severely deal with those that have just dealt this type of absolutely despicable war crime upon your people.
Yeah. Well, when they've said for over a year now that they want peace, that they don't have the stomach for a fight anymore, I mean, I just don't know how you can move forward with a two-state solution. I mean, they've effectively had a two-state solution since 2005 when Gaza got its own independence. Israel backed out. They removed their settlements. So they've had that. And look what they've gotten. There's been no peace there. And I know that Russia and the Arab League want that two-state solution. I just don't see how you can negotiate peace with these people if they have lied to you like that. I mean, how do you trust them now? And of course, you know, that brings up a broader question of trust. Israel really has to be wondering who their neighbors or how their neighbors are going to respond, because they've lived in peace with them. Has that all been a lie? You know, when you're lied to somebody like this so severely, that begins to really make you question your trust with everybody, and including America. I mean, well, look how America has abandoned our own allies. We did it there in South Vietnam. What happened recently there with Afghanistan? There's been time and again when we've said that we've got somebody's back and then we just turn our back on them.
Yeah, well, I totally understand that. And I sincerely hope that Egypt, Jordan, and the rest of their neighbors stay out of this. I'm not worried about Jordan per se, but Egypt has their issues. And it sounds to me like the Saudis, like as much as people may dislike the guy that's kind of running thing over there, that guy was making real efforts to try and come to some type of an agreement here. And the more thinking states, I believe, in the Arab world are trying to make efforts in that direction. And I certainly hope they continue to do so, because these Iranians are still a pain and still do not want that. And it's too bad to see, but, you know, it's not inconsistent with their behavior.
No.
I mean, they've been supporting these type of terrorist activities for the last 30 years, 40 years. Since 79, since the hostage crisis.
Yeah. I think going forward, it's going to be interesting to see how this balanced scale tilts, because if Israel, I think, goes too far, that has the real danger of bringing in Hezbollah. In fact, I think they've already said that they are likely going to be pulled in if Israel doesn't pull back. And Hezbollah is better armed than Hamas. Oh. And Hamas has around 40,000 fighters it can call up. Hezbollah has 100,000 regular troops. And they have better weapons, I believe. And so if Hezbollah attacks, that's going to have a huge impact. If you are now in Israel and you're fighting a war on two fronts, talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, while I totally understand, you know, what you're saying, I think the real issue with this area that we're dealing with here is you're dealing with an urban warfare situation, Mark, where you're basically fighting house to house, building to building, you know, whereas on the other side of the country, you know, with these other places, you got more open ground you got to cover before you get there. And the Israelis still own the air. And I don't see the ability to mass and move that many troops in secret, you know, in those type of numbers without substantial air superiority being brought in from the Israelis and you know, possibly with the United States help. So it's very much, I don't, while it's a threat, I think the bigger threat right now is what they've got to deal with right now with Hamas.
If Hezbollah does attack and decide to get involved in this, do you see that dragging either Lebanon or Syria in with them?
Well, Syria is a non-state actor anyway, and Lebanon has been what I consider to be a fifth world country for, well, as far as I remember, with, you know, for the last 30 years, you know. So, I mean, I don't see state-sponsored acts going on. Do I see, you know, terrorists from different areas coming in to join in? Hell, I'm sure if there's ISIS around there, they'll join in too. Hmm. You know, so is it a threat? Yes, but I don't see the threat substantially at the level where the Israelis can't handle that type of an invasive, if you will, environment. I think the Israelis are going to do what they have to do. Hmm. And, you know, thrust by Hezbollah, well, whatever, is they're always there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We skimmed over it earlier, the incursion across the southern border, our southern border. We're going to talk about that more in depth next with Scott McEwen. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about Israel's war with Hamas with best-selling author Scott McEwen, the co-author of American Sniper. He also has his own books out there, including the Sniper Elite series of novels and other nonfiction military-focused books. And so he is an avid researcher of the military and has many active and former experts on which he draws. So, Scott, we were talking about the potential involvement of Hezbollah. So let's just say that they do decide to get involved. And I had asked you about Syria and Lebanon, but do you think that might... if Hezbollah attacks, do you think Israel would attack Iran at that point? Because we all know they're behind it, and they're certainly the ones funding Israel's demise.
I don't think so. I don't know that would be a tripwire effect. I mean, while Hezbollah is certainly funded by Iran, I don't think you can say that Hezbollah is Iranian's regular military. Obviously, they're a terrorist group that has also received weapons and funding from the Iranians, but there's a lot of them that receive weapons and funding from the Iranians. So would that act per se cause, you know, Iran to hit Tehran? I don't think so, but I could be wrong. You know, I think you're dealing with an area where, you know, these terrorist groups that I hadn't heard, Mark, I'm certainly not disputing that number, but that Hezbollah numbers 100,000 regular troops. You know, but that being said, it's a substantial force in that region. You know, as far as missiles and things of that nature, I'm sure they get similar type of support that Hamas does. But, you know, I just don't think that an immediate hit from either Lebanon or Syria would cause a tripwire to go after Tehran. But world's gone crazy.
Yeah. I think that about sums it up for sure. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what's, you know, here closer at home as far as what now. We've had 7 million that we know of illegals crossing our southern border. Scott, there are laws in place governing that border. If an everyday American breaks the law, they go to jail. Yet how can the Biden officials break our immigration laws and nothing is done to them?
It's absolutely preposterous. And I think this about face that we've seen recently, largely caused by these Democratic mayors, you know, finally saying enough, we can't handle this stuff. New York, Chicago comes to mind immediately, saying, look, we can't have all these illegals here. And you know, and really what's happened is these Democratic mayors are telling Biden, hey, our black vote, and, you know, to be blatant about it, the people that are living in the inner cities in Chicago and New York, they're upset. They're extremely upset to the point where they're not going to vote for us. You know, like, they're leaving the party. They're going to leave and they're not going to vote for us, you know, which we can count on generally in elections. And I think that's causing them, well, it's obviously causing them some pause, because he's now going to, quote, build the wall, which he said he would never do. So obviously we have an about face in tactics. However, the proverbial cow is already out of the barn.
Yes,
we have 7 million here. And my concern is, an American and somebody who loves this country, is amongst those 7 million, if only we have, say, 5%, whatever, that are bad actors or that could be made into bad actors against this country, you know, if they weren't given sufficient money or funds or whatever else they wanted, you know, that could be a substantial issue as far as attacks inside this country are concerned. And I, heaven forbid, and I don't want this to happen, but I certainly hope that the FBI and the CIA and the other NHA and DHS are making efforts to track and watch these individuals that are in the country now that they know are on terrorist watch lists and things of that nature, to try and catch these people before they're able to put together substantial plots against this country. Or I'm relatively confident we will see those plots come to fruition in the near future.
Yeah, that's what was going to be my next question. But just to add to what you just said, if we've got 7 million people are coming across there that we know of, if even just 0.5% of them are bad actors and willing to take up arms against America, that's 35,000 people. That's sure. That's almost as much as Hamas's standing army is now, 35,000 people. You had mentioned these pro-Palestinian demonstrations in New York City and Detroit, and I forget some of the other cities that this has happened, but we've also seen them on college campuses. If Israel escalates the war, do you think that for sure we will see these kinds of attacks here, or are they just holding off on that?
Well, I don't think it's going to be number one, I don't know that it's caused by Israel escalating the war. I'm not willing to make that nexus there because I think Israel has every right to defend itself and to respond to the death, mayhem, murder, and killing of women and children that we've just witnessed. So, you know, I don't want to make those two in any way equivalent, you know what I mean, Mark, in my comment, but I will tell you this. You know, I mean, I'm very concerned that these groups have already learned some terrorist tactics, and I don't care what you call it, in that last election cycle, you know, and that they, let's just say, get fomented by certain people within certain parties to, I believe, create chaos. And I think we're going to see it again in the very near future. And I think that these groups operating within those groups, i.e., you know, groups that we saw in the last election cycle causing, you know, burning down a building, whatever, you know, complete chaos, that could be a very active area for people to do even more damage to this country as we come upon another contentious election season.
Yeah, I certainly think that's possible. And, you know, I mentioned them holding off. I honestly think that one of the reasons why we have been attacked already from within is that our enemies know that Biden is their cash cow. And as long as he's in place, he'll keep the money coming in. And so I think attacking the U.S. might suddenly squeeze that off. How hard is it, do you think, to smuggle weapons across the southern border and elude detection? I mean, do you think we already have some major weapons of potentially mass destruction already here?
I would have to think so. Yes. If you're talking nuclear weapons, that's a whole different story. I mean, obviously, I've written about that. That's a much more difficult thing to do. But conventional, large-scale weapons.
That's more of a hand mine.
There's more than enough resources with these. You know, basically these groups that we have operating that run the southern border now, the cartels and stuff, et cetera, that's a very, very easy way for them to get heavy weapons, heavy machine guns, heavy whatever you need to cause a lot of mayhem you know, and all you need is some fertilizer and some diesel fuel, and you can cause a pretty good blast.
Yeah, and it seems like there was a report that several hundred thousand pounds of fertilizer went missing from a train, and I don't know if we've ever heard what happened to that or even if it was actually real, but it does make you wonder. All right, everyone stay with us.
No, it was real.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It was real.
It was.
Okay. It was real. I remember that exactly, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's not concerning. Okay, coming up, we'll wrap things up with Scott McEwen talking about Israel's new war with Hamas. And welcome back on our final segment now with Scott McEwen. He is the best-selling author of American Sniper with Chris Kyle and a military writer and researcher on his own. And we have a ton of research for you today on today's show page, which is 13-41. And you can also find Scott's books listed there as well. And Scott, in the initial hours of this attack by Hamas in Israel, I was a little surprised there wasn't more individual armed responses. I just assumed that Israel, as attacked as often as it is, it would have had its own form of the Second Amendment, except they don't, it turns out. In fact, they are rather big on gun control, but some settlements do have armories. And I'd like to read this. Inbar Lieberman led a group of residents to kill more than two dozen advancing terrorists while defending the kibbutz near Am, just a mile from the Gaza Strip. How? Because she quickly realized that the sounds were different to those she had heard during the usual rocket attacks on the kibbutz and rushed to open the armory and distribute guns among the 12-member security team. She killed five terrorists herself while the others claimed the lives of 20 more over a four-hour period. And this is the key. Near Am was turned into an impenetrable fortress while nearby kibbutzes suffered heavier losses because of that armed response that they had. So are you surprised like I was, that Israel does not have any kind of Second Amendment?
I was. You know, I knew that they had gun control there, but I also knew that, not unlike Switzerland, you know, amongst those that are active and inactive, they do issue weapons, you know, to the populace. So I think the Second Amendment is a very good lesson to learn here, and that those that were able to defend themselves did defend themselves. And I'm glad to hear that story. I had not read that story, Mark, but that's heartening to hear that, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a vicious world out there, and they live even closer to the viciousness of the world than, say, for example, we might. But that being said, you know, an armed populace is not one that you're going to have your kids' heads cut off. I'm sorry, but it needs to be that blatant. And an armed populace is not one that's going to put up with these acts taking place in their presence. Certainly wouldn't be in my neighborhood, I'll guarantee it.
Yeah.
But, I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment. I've always supported it. I believe that 99% of the people out there can handle the responsibility of a firearm. And I believe that the best defense to these type of acts, you know, are that the people and the populace be well-trained and well-armed.
Yeah. I think that the majority of people, certainly men in Israel, have to spend, I think, 2 years in the military. So they certainly got the training for it. In the wake of these attacks, though, Israel has announced that they're going to start relaxing some of the gun laws to get guns into the right hands. And also, I think they're opening up the amount of ammunition that you can have. I think they were limited to 20 or something like that. But I just think that Israel may suddenly move towards its own Second Amendment. And I think that in itself shows how different this attack has been from others, and also how different things are going to be now moving forward. What do you think?
I think that they have to. I mean, ultimately, you know, they're going to have to. I mean, the world is a dangerous place. And I think another place they learned that too is Ukraine. I mean, look at that. I mean, Look at that, you know, ultimately those people had to defend themselves, you know. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is that all states may try and color it and make it look like, oh, we will protect you. But when the proverbial crap hits the fan, you've got to be able to protect yourself. And I really am a big believer in self-defense and the right of the people to keep and bear arms. And I'm particularly here in the United States, but it doesn't just apply here. It's everywhere. And I think that if you want to defend your family and you have the ability and training to do so, then by gosh, you should have the right to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. My producer slipped me a note here. She said it was limited to 50 rounds of ammunition, and they're now changing that to 100. So, yeah, they're taking this.
I've got a couple more than that myself.
I imagine you probably do. Just to close out here, we've only got about a minute and change here with you. What are you most worried about at this point, or what are some of your military contacts the most worried about that you've heard from?
Well, escalation is always a very big concern. You know, in the macro scale, coming back 100,000 feet and looking in, you know, I'm very worried that the Chinese might take these acts and this two fronts that we're dealing with now with Ukraine and now the Middle East again, to take some type of action towards Taiwan. That's a very dangerous world from a macro point of view. You know, as far as world war is concerned, that's one of those tripwires that could have a very, very negative effect. In the smaller world that we're dealing with right now, I mean, we've got to start becoming more powerful and being the America that we had before, because what we're seeing right now, I believe, in Ukraine and in the Middle East as well, is weakness from an American point of view. And weakness breeds, you know, people trying to do these things and making these moves that would otherwise not be done, I believe, with a stronger America. And I just hope people learn from the events to really think about it next time when they're electing, you know, the government, the government that's going to take over this country.
Yeah, elections have consequences. Electing weak leaders has even worse consequences. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Really enjoyed your insights.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. Congratulations on being voted one of the top podcasts in America. And, you know, Carla was telling me that, and very well deserved. I'm really happy to see how well you guys are doing. And, you know, I love the state of Oregon, you know, and I love the people up there. And I really like your voice coming out there from a conservative side of view, because gosh knows the west side of that state needs help.
Oh, they sure do. Thank you so much. Appreciate all that. In one of the more infuriating articles I have seen in years, Henry Kissinger, who is a Jew, said he is horrified at the pro-Hamas rallies breaking out all across Europe. He says it was a grave mistake for Europe to take in so many foreigners. It was his policies. After convincing globalist world leaders to take immigrants from other cultures to the point where Europeans have lost their own culture, now Kissinger says it was a grave mistake? Kissinger is not stupid, but very smart people come up with extremely stupid and harmful policies, especially when they know the outcomes. Flood Europe with so-called refugees, force Europe to support them, and not ask them to adopt or embrace the culture of their new countries? What on earth did you expect to happen? What else could have happened? Of course they knew. Now, with Israel at war, people of Kissinger's ilk will be urging Israel to cut back, to cease fire. Hamas has had enough. And those leaders can say that because people like Kissinger never bear the brunt of their own policies. It's time we hold our own politicians accountable, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.